I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, it is decision day. We'll go through the local, state, and federal races that will shape our state and our nation for years to come. Plus, gubernatorial candidate Dave Reichert joins us with a final pitch to any undecided voters who remain. And is America moving away from identity politics? I sure hope so. That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember to join us tonight for our live election night coverage starting at 8:30 p.m. Pacific time. And while you're at it, make sure you sign up to support our show for just $5 a month at UndividedPod.com. We're here, baby. Made it. Did we make it yet? We got a few hours left until we make it. Man, it has been a marathon. A lot of you have been along for that marathon. The most exhausting presidential election cycle I can remember. We have a lot to talk about today. And then, of course, we're going to have our live election special tonight. We'll get more into that in a moment. Let's go through just, I think, some expectations. You know, we can talk about the national races later, but I think if you're watching this, you're pretty focused on Washington state politics. So in addition to a lot of, you know, key races, you know, at the local, state and federal level in Washington, we also have the four initiatives, which is something to consider. It has been I would say incredibly disappointing thing to watch over the last 2 months, the disinformation, because it is intentional, out about those initiatives, which I think people should have voted yes on. That's what we voted. That's obviously the common sense vote, but we'll see what happens. So I won't go over all of them, but I think you can anticipate the one that will perform the best is Initiative 2066. That is the initiative that would say you cannot ban natural gas in people's homes or in people's businesses. That, to me, first of all, it was the most recent of all the initiatives to be sent out to voters for signatures. It happened just over the summer. It had a lot of support across the political spectrum, and it is the least confusing in the way it's worded on the ballot. So I really think that is going to perform the best of the four initiatives on the ballot. And then the one I think is going to perform the worst, I will have friends who are not happy to hear this, but Initiative 2109 to repeal the capital gains tax, because that's the one that's easiest for them to vilify, right? And when you read it on the ballot, a lot of people are going to look at it and say, well, I'm not, you know, selling or making over $250,000 a year in the sale of stocks or bonds, so why do I care if there's a capital gains tax? And the media did not do a good enough job at pointing out the fact that the capital gains tax, in addition to being an illegal tax on income under Washington state's constitution, that it is the gateway to an income tax, a full-blown income tax for all of us. They've already pushed a bill that would have reduced the threshold for who has to pay a capital gains tax from $250,000 to $15,000. I think that they'll change it if this survives the initiative to apply to the sale of your primary home. So if you've built up a nice nest egg for retirement, you can count on the government taking 7% of that or more in a tax on capital gains in the future. I guarantee it. But again, that was just sort of the easier one for them to vilify. The other two that are on the ballot, you know, this gets into I'm not really sure where those are going to fall. Really confusing the way they're worded, of course, the initiative to get rid of the Climate Commitment Act and then the initiative to make the long-term care tax optional. A lot of union money spent really across the board here trying to keep these very progressive policies in place. So we will see where those fall tonight, but that would be my guess. I'm not saying that capital gains will fail, but I'm saying of the four, I think I-2109 will perform the worst. So there are some obvious races we're watching, but ones that are going, that typically go under the radar, that are so critical today. The Office of Superintendent of Public Instruction. Our public school system is a disaster. Test scores are in the toilet. Enrollment is declining. Parents want to have a choice in the state of Washington. But you have the Washington Education Association, one of, if not the most powerful entities in the state, that is apparently just fine with the decline in public education as long as they get their demands, you know, via the teachers union. So to me, David Olson is the only option here. I don't see how putting two-term incumbent Chris Ragdoll back in that job will yield a different result. result for Washington families or for our students. Now, one of the reasons, and maybe I don't think it's the only reason, but one of the reasons I think David Olson has a pretty strong chance is that this is a quote unquote nonpartisan race. So there isn't that same level of default voting because there's not an R or D next to their name. Now, I don't know what letter David Olson would have put next to his name if he had to pick one. But certainly Democrats have taken the side of Chris Reichdahl, despite, again, the failure. Even the Seattle Times endorsed him, yet they said that he's essentially failed our public education system. Like, how could you? It's insane. So I'm hoping that enough parents have gotten involved in this race, interested in this race, and know the differences between the incumbent and the challenger. David Olson is more than qualified for the job. So the other race, and I think this is one of the biggest opportunities for Republicans of the evening, right now across the entire West Coast, California, Oregon, Washington, there is not one Republican in statewide elected office. That could change tonight. There are certainly several opportunities, but perhaps one of the best opportunities for the Washington State Republican Party is in the Commissioner of Public Lands race. Former Congresswoman Jamie Herrera Butler, the Republican against Dave Updegrove, who is a Seattle liberal. And I just, you know, I wanted to put out a graphic the other day of, you know, one of the many homeless encampments in downtown Seattle and needles and stuff. And then one of our beautiful, you know, beautiful scenic areas in a red part of Washington and say, who do you want to be in charge of your public lands? You know, the type of politician who allowed Seattle parks to look like this? Or it's always funny to me that the left claims the environmentalist title, because it's like, if you look at the most beautiful, pristine places in the state of Washington, they are the more red places in the state of Washington. Jamie Herrera Butler has gotten some key endorsements that I think could help her get across the finish line, including an endorsement from the Seattle Times. She's a very moderate Republican. She knows these issues very well. Dave Updegrove is on environmental policy very, very far to the left. And even the Seattle Times said that actually, if you look at the current Commissioner of Public Lands, Hillary Franz, who the farmers and ranchers love, the landowners love, that Jamie Herrera Butler is actually closer aligned to her, despite being of a different political party, than Dave Updegrove is. So that, I know a lot of, and if you didn't see it on TV, those ads have been absolutely churning out in that race. Like, I wasn't seeing any, and then it was like, bam. So both sides know the possibilities here. And I saw some attack ads on Jamie Herrera Butler just, oh my gosh, endlessly on TV. I had to change the channel. All right, and then of course, there is this larger narrative that might even be the most important narrative of the evening in Washington State, and that is whether Democrats can achieve a supermajority in the state Senate. I don't think that it's possible in the state House this time around, but there are seven or eight key seats that Republicans have to either flip or hold on to. And these are specifically, I'm looking at the state Senate, in order to avoid having Democrats picking up a net of four seats, which would give them a supermajority. So that would give them an awful lot of power to do things, not be concerned with any dissent, not be concerned with a gubernatorial veto, and to erode our protections under the state constitution. Remember what Shasti Conrad said, the chair of the Washington State Democratic Party. Remember, we've talked about it enough. What do they want to do if they achieve supermajorities? Clean up the state constitution. The very first thing they will come for, I've said it, mark my words, I should put a bet on it, is the right to initiative. They'll try to erode it. So these are the seats that we are going to be watching very, very closely tonight. Ron Muzol over in the 10th Legislative District to the 14th Legislative District. And Republicans, they don't have to win all of these, but they need to win most of these. So we're watching the 17th Legislative District, the 5th Legislative District, which is over in East King County. Really hope that Chad Monkadons can pull that one off. Kelbon out in the 24th Legislative District, Maya Espinoza in the 28th Legislative District, so sort of South Pierce County area. Add to these the 18th Legislative District, which is down there close to the Oregon-Washington border in Southwest Washington. So we will have our eye on all of those. I know Senate Minority Leader John Braun will be closely counting and tallying and seeing where they sit at the end of the night. And so we'll be checking in with him, I am sure. So all of that, and then, of course, the governor's race. You know, I obviously have supported Dave Reichert's campaign, as have many of you. We have been out actively volunteering for him, you know, trying to support and rally the troops, so to speak, in any way we can. And that's because I firmly believe Bob Ferguson will be the nail in our state's coffin. He has completely reinvented himself to run for governor. He has dubbed himself the public safety candidate. He has dubbed himself a change agent, which is fascinating considering he went from the King County Council to 12 years in the Attorney General's office. I don't know how you would all of a sudden emerge a change agent from all of that. But I will say this, if Bob Ferguson is victorious tonight, the only thing he would have won is the award for the most dishonest campaign in Washington state history. Period. It's not even close. And it doesn't even have to do with my dislike of him necessarily as a politician. I have covered a lot of politics. It's what I've done for 15 years. I've seen a lot of dishonest campaigns. Every campaign cycle has its share of dishonest ads. But Bob Ferguson took things to a whole new level. Every ad he had on TV had some sort of dishonesty, gaslighting in it. And it wasn't just about inflating his own record and completely manufacturing a record on public safety and, you know, putting himself out there as some budget hawk, just insane. But it's also the way in which he attacked Dave Reichert, a very moderate Republican, so much so that he didn't even get his own party's endorsement. There are some Republicans who still call him a rhino and refuse to vote for him, yet Bob Ferguson was able to paint him as a right-wing Trump extremist. So again, the most dishonest campaign I've ever seen in Washington state history. And if Dave Reichert can emerge victorious after that, that will really be saying something about how unelectable Bob Ferguson is. Dave Reichert was nice enough this morning, obviously a busy day for him, but to join us for a couple minutes to make a final pitch to any voters out there who might still be undecided. Dave Reichert, welcome back to Undivided.
Hey, thank you for having me back.
Yeah, I love how normal you are because I said, you know, what are you going to do after this? And you said you have to help jumpstart your granddaughter's car so she can get to a doctor's appointment. I was like, of course he is.
Right. She left her headlights on and so I'm going to come to her rescue today.
Well, we need you to come to the rescue of Washington State. I will say it's been a pleasure getting to know you a little bit better throughout your campaign and being able to come out and, try to wake people up to the leadership that we need. How are you feeling today?
I'm feeling good. I think we did everything that we could do with your help and Nicole's help and others across the state. I think we put in a superhuman effort in covering the state and trying to get our message out. Of course, we've had the typical conservative obstacles to overcome. You know what they are.
Yeah,
but, I really feel good where we are. And I feel very good about how we conducted this campaign.
Yeah. Do you feel like you talk about the conservative obstacles? I mean, today is not a day for complaining. We can do that if we need to tomorrow. But, you know, I've pointed them out on my show. I think there's definitely a media issue and a media bias and all of that. But, you know, through the ads, I mean, you can't turn on the TV without seeing a Bob Ferguson ad attacking you as like a right wing extremist. Do you feel like you've been able to give Washington voters an accurate picture of who you are?
You know, I feel fortunate because I think they had at least a segment of the population already had a very strong positive opinion about me just as they look back throughout my service career. And I think a lot of those people were able to share that with their friends and neighbors. And so I had a little advantage there. I did have to reintroduce myself to some of the younger population and some of those who just moved into the state. And that was a mission. And I think that once they had an opportunity to meet me or hear me, I believe that we were able to sway some people to have faith in us.
Yeah. Were the attacks beyond what you even thought they would be or pretty par for what you expected?
Well, I'm used to the attacks from previous campaigns. I'll be honest with you. These were pretty intense, and they were intense because they were so untruthful. And to be able to combat that, you have to have reasonable people listen to your message. So I think we're sort of in a place where, you know, there are people who are open-minded enough to look for facts themselves. Sadly, there are people in our state who have decided if the message does not match their reality, they won't listen.
So obviously there is a lot of people who've already voted, right? And so their votes are what they are. I want to talk about them first. You know, the latest polling in this race hasn't looked great for you. I don't trust polling very much. I mean, we saw some really inaccurate pollings for statewide races in 2022. What's your sense based off of conversations you're having with voters, especially voters who don't identify as Republican?
Yeah. Man, if we just went by all of the anecdotal experiences, well, not those aren't anecdotal, but stories that I might hear from others, and then my personal experience in interacting with people that are identified as swing voters, we win this race. And I'll point to, and you so expertly highlighted the Pacific Islander event, Asian Pacific Islander event, that was totally unexpected. And it was, as we entered, we were told to expect some backlash, but instead it was overwhelming support by hundreds of people there. So I just think that I'll share one story that was sort of humorous too. I was downtown meeting with some businessmen and women in Belltown 2-3 weeks ago. And as we were walking to the event, it was probably around 6 o'clock in the evening, bicyclist riding by, jumps off, does a double take, jumps off his bike, runs over and goes, you got to save us. Help. I'm voting for you. And those stories happened more than, you know, once a week. I mean, it was consistent.
Yeah. And I've gotten messages from friends who are very liberal, who just understand we can't keep rowing in the same direction and expect to fix things. And so that's been good for me to see that, you know, millions of dollars in ads be damned. There are people who are able to cut through that noise and figure out who you really are. For voters who have not either voted yet, when I was out knocking on doors for you, Dave, I was kind of terrified by the number of people who said, I don't vote or my vote doesn't count. You know, conservatives who've just lost so many times, they're like, I'm not even doing it.
Yeah.
Or for folks who just haven't found the enthusiasm to pick up the ballot that's sitting on their counter and fill it out, what's your message to them today?
Well, the first thing I would say is hopefully some of those it might be old enough to remember the Dino Rossi race. I was with Dino Rossi a couple weeks ago at an event where we both spoke, and he said to the crowd, look, I lost by, I forget what the exact number was, a couple hundred votes. And then he said that was sad enough. There were three recounts. But what was really sad is afterwards, people told him, gee, if I'd known it was that close, I would have voted.
Oh.
I don't want to be Dino Rossi walking the streets later and have people say that to me. Ladies and gentlemen, please vote. This is the opportunity to take back the state of Washington and get your vote in today. It is critical for you, businesses, jobs, crime, public safety, education. All of those things today, we could balance and not go to the extreme like we have been the last 12 years.
Yeah. Amen. Well, I know that we'll be talking to you after the first ballots drop, hopefully tonight, maybe even tomorrow. Again, you know, thank you for letting us kind of come along and tag along on the ride with you a little bit. And as I've told everybody else, you know, it's been painful for me to sit and watch the commercials painting you as someone you're not. And for anyone who has a doubt in their mind, I mean, you are just a really world-class human being. And I hope that every single person who cast a vote for you is proud of that vote. So, Dave, I know you're a candidate on election day, but you're a grandpa first. So go get your granddaughter to her doctor's appointment, okay?
Well, I got to say this, you know, I feel world-class because of the world-class people that live here.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I agree. There are problems with the state, but at the end of the day, I think people love the state. They love it in different ways, but we all want to see it improve. So hopefully we can do that after today. All right, Dave Reichert, good luck today. Thank you so much.
Later.
So that is Dave Reichert, a candidate for governor in Washington state, trying to become the first Republican governor in our state in 40 years. And look, he faces an uphill battle. I'm under no illusions about that. I've said that on the show. I believe that the day he got into the race, that it is hard to overturn 40 years of blue. And especially when you're faced with, you know, four times the spending, no seeming standards for what you're putting out there in political ads, etc. Now, just to be fair, we are also going to have Bob Ferguson on the show today to talk to. Just kidding. Nicole's like, wait, what? No.
No, that one. I guess I would.
I don't think he would. We've asked him for an interview before. I don't think we even got a response. Oh, that's right. Sorry.
Yeah.
We won't even respond to your emails, yes. Which is indicative of the kind of governor you would be. Mm-hmm. Join us tonight. We're going to be talking to candidates also in our live coverage. So starting at 8:30 p.m. Pacific time, you can join us for our live election night coverage. We will be live from the Let's Go Washington election night party. Join me, some special guests, as we break down the local, state, federal races that matter to you, and of course, what happens in the presidential election, which I also have a ton of anxiety for. So we'll be streaming live 8:30 p.m. across all of our platforms.
You know, that might be the only positive if he gets in, is that he's going to have to start answering us again.
Oh, Bobby Sue?
In his official.
Oh, yeah. Well, his office has always answered us.
Yes.
His office has always answered us. It's his campaign wing that said no. So we'll see how they treat us if he is the next governor of Washington state. I wouldn't treat me well.
God forbid.
God forbid. All right. We'll get to some more election stuff coming up in a moment. First, I have encouraged you guys. I mean, look, this is the time of year where everybody's putting on weight. So maybe you're like, I'll just put on some weight Thanksgiving, Christmas, and then I'll make a New Year's resolution. How does that work? I made a lot of New Year's resolutions. They worked for like 2 weeks, and then they just went downhill from there. So let's not go through that same playbook. Do what I did. This time, 2 years ago, I called Eastside Weight Loss Clinic, and I started their program, and I lost almost 30 pounds between Halloween and Christmas. Almost 30 pounds between Halloween and Christmas. I mean, that is absolutely crazy. And I'm down 40 pounds total. It's been 2 years now. I highly recommend this program to anyone who struggles with their weight. Who needs New Year's resolutions? Do it now. I did it during the holiday season, and those were my results, and I survived, and here I am. So schedule a free 15-minute consultation with Dr. Ryan Coogan and his team today. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com, EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. All right, regardless of what happens tonight, we know that there are going to be wins and losses. This is, you know, for those of us who tend to dissent from the prevailing political views in the state of Washington, for those of us who are really disappointed with leadership on issues like public safety and homelessness and mental health and substance abuse and affordability, and the list goes on and on and on, we're not going to get everything that we want on election night. That's just kind of par for the course when you dissent. But, you know, even for people who do see the results they're looking for in some of these races, you know, particularly where there's maybe incumbents who win and get to go back to Olympia or to Congress and have another go at it, I would ask those voters to still demand more of them, to still demand better solutions to the crises that our state is facing that have not improved. This segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. You know, I was reading this article in the Center Square, and this is just a perfect illustration of what I'm talking about here. The headline, Washington State doubles down on housing first policies in 5-year plan. Now, I've said over and over, it is a lie that housing is the main driver of our homelessness crisis. Yet we've heard it from Governor Inslee. We've heard it from King County Executive Dow Constantine. It just isn't true. And I'm not interested in continuing to debate people on the merits of that, because everyone we've spoken to who's been on the streets, who's lived on the streets, who's dealt with addiction and found the other side of it, they say it is not a housing issue. And I absolutely believe them and not the politicians who are dictating these things based on what's going to bring in the most revenue. The Center Square article reads, Washington State seems to be sticking with its housing first approach for the most part in dealing with homelessness, based on the Department of Commerce's recently released strategic plan outlining statewide goals over the next 5 years for addressing the growing unsheltered population. In a letter to state lawmakers included with the new plan, State Advisory Council on Homelessness Chair Bab Anderson said the Department of Commerce's plan, quote, provides a valuable roadmap for our state's investments to prevent and end homelessness and move households into safe, stable, affordable housing. And so, again, you have this plan, and they're required to present it, right? But it is the housing first plan where they're looking at the next 5 years, when we know housing first has been the strategy for the past 15 years. And where are we? We have more homeless people than ever before. So I feel like in any setting outside of government, if you tried something for 15 years and it was not working, you would do something else. But apparently in Washington state politics, not only do we keep doing the same stuff, but we keep electing the same people who are doing the same stuff. The article goes on to read that the 44-page plan's key goals include completing 200,000 permanent housing units within the next 4 years. In March 2023, Commerce released its final housing needs projections showing that Washington needs to add 1.1 million homes over the next 20 years, and about half of them, or more than half of them, need to be affordable for low-income residents. Commerce has requested $1.2 billion in capital funding to support that goal, and the department plans to ask the state legislature for the housing money needed to keep up with Washington's projected population growth over the next two decades, and they will present that plan to lawmakers in early 2025. So as we've said with many things in the what I call the homeless industrial complex, and many other people call it that as well, that, you know, Governor Inslee, when he came out a year and a half ago and said in his State of the State that the fundamental underlying cause of our homeless crisis was a lack of affordable housing, he did that in the same sentence. He asked taxpayers to foot the bill to the tune of $4 billion to meet those goals. Again, after 10 to 15 years of focusing on housing as a path out of the homeless crisis, only to have a worse homeless crisis than ever before. So I think my message to Democratic voters in particular, because it is Democrats who've been in charge of this stuff, is look, if there's a reason, for instance, you can't vote for a Republican, or you can't bring yourself to do it, or Donald Trump or some other sort of issue, I hope you can at least bring yourself to hold the people you vote for accountable for their failed policies and for their failed approaches to things like this. Because, you know, for instance, for progressives, I think progressives are empathetic people. I think genuinely in their heart, they are empathetic people. Sometimes policies that they support don't translate to empathy, in my opinion. You know, it can't be a progressive value to leave people unsheltered on our sidewalks and in our parks where they freeze to death and die, or are more likely to be the victim of violent crime. It can't be a progressive value to let people die in our alcoves with needles in their arm, or slowly poison themselves with a drug like fentanyl until they finally take the dose that kills them. It can't be a progressive value to tax the working class to the point where they can't afford food and groceries, or where a two-income home isn't enough to move them into home ownership. You know, those can't be progressive values. So if for some reason that's just the way that you vote and the people who you're putting in office are the ones you're going to continue to support, do that, but on the back end, hold them accountable. Hold them accountable to the values that they claim to have and to the results that I think all of us want to see. So yeah, we're going to have, you know, not everybody's going to get what they want on election night. That's just the way things are. But I think we all want the same outcomes. We want to reduce homelessness, I think. We want to reduce the number of people who can't buy a home when they're working hard. We want to, you know, improve the substance abuse crisis and the mental health crisis. So that means we can't keep doing what we've been doing. Now, if some of these incumbents get back in, it's going to be the same people. We just need to urge them to pursue different policies. That segment was brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. All right, we've had a lot of undivided viewers and subscribers who reached out to our friend Wes Jones when they went to sell their home. One of them is Mike Boggs, who is retiring from the Seattle Police Department, going to sell his home of 30 years. And so he watches the show and he thought, well, heck, I'll reach out to Wes Jones.
So the concerns were, is it presentable enough to sell quickly to get the price you want? West came out and met with us, and we told him what our concerns were. And he mentioned the concierge service, and we did take advantage of it. It was such an easy process. West is a really great guy, and his team is amazing, and the communication is great. So the whole process was great.
Of course, because Wes is awesome. And Wes and his team, the marketing services they offer, you know, making sure your listing stands out, the most eyeballs on your listing, all of that really is second to none. So check out Wes Jones, sellwithwes.com, sellwithwes.com. They'll start by giving you a free market analysis so you can kind of know how well your home is positioned and what's going on with the market. And then you can use their free home value calculator right there on the website to see how much your home is worth. It might be worth more than you think. Sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, we had a fascinating interview on education on Sundays with subscribers this past Sunday. And education, again, is an issue I think we've covered more and more on the show. And the more we cover it, the more we cover it, because then we get parents and teachers and stuff sending us tips, which we love, by the way. This story actually came to us. Can we say who this story came to us through? Was that a secret?
Well, I don't think so. I think you could.
David Olson, who's running for superintendent of public instruction, we were at an event. He was there, and he pulls Nicole and I aside, and he says, "You know, you need to talk to this mom, Jolie." He said she's got a daughter, 11 years old, in the Mukilteo School District. The daughter has some special education needs. She's got dyslexia. She has this kind of translating into some behavioral issues. And he said, "You would not believe the lengths that this mom has had to go to get basic support that her tax money pays for from the Mukilteo School District for her daughter to be able to succeed in her classes." This mom, so he told us about this. We got in touch, put us in touch with this mom. She has spent, it's insane, 7 years, thousands of dollars on an attorney to basically send demand letters to the Mukilteo School District. Had to go through this long, drawn-out complaint process through the Office of Superintendent of Public Instruction, and still 7 years later isn't getting the kind of support that she needs for her daughter and that her daughter needs to be able to succeed. And really, the conversation was interesting because it seems like, to us, that a lot of this comes down to funding. It's like, no, they just want to pluck her out of normal classes and put her in special education classes rather than giving her, you know, a paraeducator so she can stay in these classes, because she's a brilliant young girl, as her mom says. She just needs a little extra support. But it seems like they, you know, maybe get more money from her for her if she's fully in these special education programs. And meanwhile, her mom, Jolie, says it is having a devastating impact on her as a parent and also on her daughter's mental health.
As a parent, do you believe that you would have been able to navigate this without hiring an attorney?
No.
Wow.
And I think that's probably why we're still doing this, and that it's so common, because I know that I'm not the only one. In fact, I have other parents that, you know, one of our close friends that was with my daughter in her classroom in fourth grade, they relocated out of state because there's just nothing you can do.
Yeah.
And, you know, we try to talk like rational, normal human beings and with people that are paid by us to provide for our children. And it's just pushback, and there is no, you're dumbfounded.
Mm-hmm.
Just how could this be happening? What do you mean? Like, why aren't you helping? Why is this so hard? I mean, I feel like we're hostages.
So you mentioned your daughter is just in a state of crisis. I mean, how has all of this impacted her?
I mean, I can't find words because I don't know how bad it is. I know how bad it is just from as a parent, but, you know, from a psychological, professional, since I am not a professional, I think it's a lot worse than I know. And honestly, I don't know what we're going to do. I think, are we ever going to be normal? Are we ever going to move past all of this? Because these were the most important times of her life and her development and her education. And how are we going to, you know, it's going to be years. And the trauma emotionally for her, it's really showing, because here she is last year, she, for the first time ever being in school, she was doing PowerPoint presentations. She's an artist. Mm-hmm. She was teaching the class how to draw dragons. I mean, her general education teacher last year was just like a normal teacher who's amazing, right? That cares about kids. And so she had never experienced, I mean, she's been in a cage.
Yeah.
And so then when we throw her back into, you know, and plus her peers are at the other school in our neighborhood where she could be riding the bus, going to lunch with her friends. Just the last couple weeks have been, yeah, we're in trouble. Big trouble.
What do you mean by that?
Well, she was diagnosed with major depressive disorder last November. I mean, she's 11. And it's just, it's intense. I mean, she's, I can't get her out of bed. She's coming home after school wanting to go to bed. This is not my child. She's angry. She doesn't, you know, and she, I can, what I'm going through as a parent and, you know, I've got a lot of mental health familiarity and I understand emotions and all of these things and trauma, and I'm struggling and what it's doing to her, you know, so it's just, I'm taken back right now as, and I'm trying to get her the help and support that she needs. But right now she's shut down and really withdrawn. And, I don't know, every day I'm trying to find the solutions.
Yeah, it's just insane what this public school systems are doing to these parents. If you want to watch that full interview with Jolie Pesek from Sundays with Subscribers, you can sign up undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. And again, a big thank you to David Olson, a candidate for Office of Superintendent of Public Instruction, who cares enough about parents, knows that parents and students aren't getting what they need to succeed in our public school system, and who cornered us and basically says, you've got to talk to this mom. What's happening to her is not okay. And again, not every parent is going to be able to come out of pocket thousands of dollars, take time off work, you know, hire this attorney, go through this legal process. And she won a complaint, by the way, against the school district. And you know what they did? Oh, they basically turned around, and you don't win like money or anything like that. Her daughter essentially wins more like hours of help, which she should have gotten anyway. But it's up to the mom and the school district to negotiate how that's all going to play out when the mom has had failed negotiations with the school district to get basic help for her daughter who's struggling with her educational needs. So things have to change 100%. The education system in our state is failing. It is a symptom of a larger problem. And hopefully tonight can be the beginning of change and progress and a positive development for parents and kids in the state of Washington. Heart just breaks for her. Insane stuff. And by the way, when we posted that on Sundays with Subscribers, so many other parents said, ditto. I've experienced this too, or I used to work in the public school system, and this is all about money and funding, and it's not about the kids. Horrific, horrific stuff. All right. In our segment, Unbelievable, the Washington State Democratic Party has taken the side of a bona fide socialist. I'm not just saying, throwing that word out there, a bona fide self-identified socialist over a Democratic candidate for Washington State Legislature. Tells you a lot about the state of the Democratic Party. We'll get to that in our segment, Unbelievable. First, I want to make sure that Undivided subscribers are alerted to the Roanoke Conference that's coming up. So it's my favorite political event of the year because in part it happens in Ocean Shores, and Mike and I love to go bring the dogs and kind of make a weekend out of it. But it's the biggest political conference in the state for people who are center right. Really great group of people, but it does tend to sell out. So what they've done is said that the first 100 registrants can get an early bird discount. They also have special discounts for students, active duty military, and law enforcement. It starts on the 24th of January, goes to the 26th, again, in Ocean Shores. And they're going to be talking about public safety, prosperity in the state of Washington, all of the issues that we care about. They have some great informative panels. I've been involved in a couple of them, and their keynote speaker is going to be Coleman Hughes this year. He's the host of the podcast Conversations with Coleman, author of The End of Race Politics, An Argument for a Colorblind America. So I love it. I've gone 3 years in a row, except 1 year was it the COVID shut it down or something like that. Really good time. I'm sure we'll be there again. Yes, we will be there again this year. So you can sign up for that early registration discount, roanokeconference.org, roanokeconference.org. And do what I do. Bring your dogs. Oh, Mac loves the beach. She loves it out there. And then it's like kind of cold, right? So you're not swimming and stuff. But she will find the stankiest. She will find the stankiest stuff that has washed up from the ocean. And she'll just roll in it. And she just loves it. And you know, at her age, our old dog, you just kind of let her. You do you, girl. Like dead
later.
Crab shell. It's been rotting. Fine. You do you. We'll hose you down. Makes her so happy. All right. As I said, the Washington State Democratic Party has not only taken the side of a bona fide socialist over a Democrat in a race for state legislature, but they are actively sending out volunteers to lie to voters about the Democrat in the race. Let's talk about it in our segment, Unbelievable. All right, so you know by now we're watching a couple races of interest for state legislature. One of them is in the 43rd legislative district. So this is for state representative, and it is the district smack dab in the heart of downtown Seattle. So our friend, admittedly, look, I have a bias. Andrea Suarez, the founder of We Heart Seattle, is running in this race to represent the area where she spent the last few years picking up trash and homeless encampments and actually out there connecting people who are drug addicted to services. And then you've got Sean Scott, who is a socialist, a Democratic socialist, member of that movement. Someone who is very, very far to the left, as we have said on the show before. You know, he was in favor of police abolition. He celebrated, you know, cop cars being lit on fire in 2020, basically saying, oh, things were getting done much quicker in the city when cop cars were on fire. He recently came out during this campaign and supported the pro-Hamas terrorism that was happening on our highways, blocking people from getting where they need to go, blocking access to the Seattle-Tacoma International Airport. So very, very fringe leftist. Except we know that the Washington State Democratic Party, I don't know if it's because she's too effective, because Andrea's running as a Democrat. And I don't know if it's because she has pointed out and called out the homeless industrial complex for what it is, and has shown that she, with far less money and far fewer hands, can do far more than the government machine that is essentially funding the cronies of the Democratic Party, and they are never going to fix homelessness because that's how all those people keep jobs and keep the money coming in. I think that's what it is, because they've turned on her from the very beginning, basically said she's not a Democrat, she's a Republican, so we're going to side with an actual socialist over a Democrat. And just today, Andrea Suarez had put out a video where she was talking to a voter who is telling her what volunteers and people within the Democratic Party said to her as a voter about Andrea Suarez. Here's the clip.
I did talk to people working in the Democratic Party who told me not to vote for Suarez because she was a Republican.
They're literally going out talking to voters, the Democratic Party, saying that the only Democrat in the race is a Republican. And they're throwing their support and their resources actively behind a socialist police abolitionist. That's not hyperbole again. He's written articles on this. This is June 2020. The time to abolish Seattle police was yesterday. Literally wants to get rid of the police, and he wants to represent the area of the state most in need of police. And that is the person the state Democratic Party has not only chose to actively support, but actively lie about his opponent, who's a bona fide, who's been a Democratic, what do you call him? The individual committees, where you've got, why can't I think of the word? Precinct committee officer for the Democratic Party. And they're like, no, you're not a Democrat. And they'll point to like, oh, she's friends with, she's friends with Jonathan Cho. You know, she's gone to Republican events because she doesn't care what group or crowd she talks to. If they want to actually solve homelessness and substance abuse, she'll work with anyone. And that's exactly what we need in Olympia. She should have run as an independent because she was never going to get help from the Democratic Party. Because again, she's challenging their machine. She's pointing out that what they're doing is for money, not for results. So they're so mad about that. And their cronies and their allies who are enriching themselves off that, they said, well, let's support the police abolitionist. Sean Scott, I can't even tell you how crazy that would be if the legislative district in the state most in need of law and order that would least benefit from a socialist, from socialist representation in the state house sends Sean Scott to Olympia. God, give me a break. But that's the Democrat, today's Democratic Party in Washington. And I was just having a, I'm not going to out him, but I was having a conversation with one of my dear, dear friends who used to live here, is living on the East Coast now on the way here. And, you know, we disagree over the presidential race, which is totally fine. But I was sort of pointing out that, like, unless you've lived with the consequences of a Democratic Party that is this far left, that does the things and supports the things and supports the people that our state's Democratic Party has, like, I can understand how people elsewhere in the country would be Democrats. Like, my mom thinks she's a Democrat. You pluck my mother up from Minnesota, you drop her in Seattle, make her live here for 10 years, it'd take her 2 months to be a Republican. And so it's just this sliding scale, and I think what we want to protect the rest of the country from is a Democratic Party like a Kamala Harris, who's, you know, all she is a far left California progressive. And now she wants to export, she's acting like a moderate because that's what suits her now, but she wants to export the progressivism of California, Oregon, and Washington State to the rest of the country. I don't want people suffering like we've suffered. But the Democratic Party here supports socialists, so they can't act like they're the party of moderacy. Wild, wild stuff. That is a race that we will be watching very closely tonight. All right, we'll get to national news coming up in a moment. First, after the election, depending on the results, you may or may not be more worried about your retirement portfolio. Well, Zach Abraham and his team at Bulwark Capital have you covered. They're going to be doing another one of their Know Your Risk live webinars coming up on November 21st at 3:30 p.m. Pacific time. You can sign up. It's totally free. KnowYourRiskRadio.com. KnowYourRiskRadio.com. It's a full reveal of how they use their risk management strategy to adjust to a volatile world that could impact your retirement portfolio. Risk management is Bulwark's number one focus. The webinar is also a perfect, no obligation way for you to get to know them, have all your questions answered, and maybe leave a little less anxious. Can't we all hope and dream that we'll be a little less anxious after the election? I know that I won't, but that's okay. When you have to do politics for your job, there's no escaping the anxiety. Mm-hmm. It lives with us. Anyway, knowyourriskradio.com. Knowyourriskradio.com. Sign up for that. Okay, national news. This gave me a little bit of joy today. And so we wanted to include this because it's not all like doom and gloom. I do believe that there's a movement in this country that is going to come in earnest from the younger generation toward independence. And I'm not saying independent, like in terms of an independent voter, but people who are independent-minded, who are going to look at the candidates and the issues and not just default to one party or the other. You know, they might be a Democrat, but they're willing to see and they want to think for themselves. They eagerly want to think for themselves and vote, you know, their conscience and vote, you know, not only with their heart, but with their brains. And I do think the younger generation is going to save us from this political, hopeless division, party loyalty crap that we're in. But on top of that, I think you also see the younger generation, but more and more people on the left realizing that this woke identity politics thing is ridiculous. And it's not supported by most Americans. This idea that things like your skin pigmentation, your gender should or is some sort of qualification for a job. And we've seen this like woke identity virus infiltrate so many things. You know, more and more recently, there's been the move away from DEI departments. There have been several major companies that have said we're cutting our DEI departments. So I think Microsoft did that fairly recently, saying like we don't need a full department for DEI. We're going to hire the best people for the job. And sometimes they'll be white. Sometimes they won't be white. Sometimes they'll be women. Sometimes they won't be women. They'll be gay, whatever it is, which is the way that we should be doing things. America is the ultimate, or used to be the ultimate, in meritocracy. But this from the New York Times this morning. In a shift from 2020, identity politics loses its grip on the country. It says, so it gets into sort of, they said there are signs that society is moving away from the progressive left's often strict expectations about how to discuss culture and politics. And it talks about how all these areas that have really dove headfirst into this are failing. And so they're starting to backtrack. It says, in Hollywood, attempts at inclusive casting did not always attract audiences who seemed uninterested in some rebooted movie franchises or TV classics like the all-female The Marvels or The Wonder Years with a Black Family. Publishers, too, have sometimes pulled back. In Britain, an uproar followed the editing of Roald Dahl's children's novels, which included replacing the word fat with enormous and renaming the villainous Cloud Men from James the Giant Peach as gender-neutral cloud people. Yeah, like people are over that nonsense. I think most Americans have always been over it, always thought it was stupid, but are starting to find their voice with more and more people speaking out And now, like, the majority is, like, more, it's more obvious that that's a real, like, fringe minority who supports those kinds of things. The New York Times says, by the middle of the 2020 primary, Democrats were engaged in policy debates, so it's going back 4 years, that no voters asked for and that had no enduring constituency. That's from Liz Smith, who was a senior advisor to Pete Buttigieg's presidential campaign at the time. The primary debates featured candidates declaring support for slashing law enforcement funding, repealing laws that made unauthorized border crossings illegal, and ending private health insurance. Since then, candidates who align themselves with progressive activists have fared poorly in many high-profile races, even in deep blue bastions. It brings up Seattle. In 2021, Seattle's voters elected a Republican as city attorney after a violent outbreak of protests downtown. This year in Portland, a former Republican defeated the incumbent district attorney, a Democrat who had praised laws decriminalizing the possession of small amounts of drugs. So again, you know, there have been, and there's still, I mean, Kamala Harris is someone who in 2020 was supporting the ideas around police defunding, paying for transgender surgeries for illegal immigrants and prisoners. And now she's like, oh, I'm law and order. And she's might be the next president. So not everyone who's taken those fringe positions has lost their races. And it sets up, I think, a really important question for Democrats. And this is why I've said the best result for the presidential election, in my opinion, is that Donald Trump wins in a landslide. It's his last term in office. So for those of us who have never been really thrilled with Donald Trump, it's four more years. There's an expiration date and then the party can decide what it wants to be moving forward. But also, if it's a landslide, it has to serve to wake up the Democratic Party that people don't want what they're selling. They don't want this extreme gender ideology. They don't want identity politics. They don't want this soft on crime stuff. And maybe it'll be a much needed overdue snapback for Democrats in a state like ours. The New York Times says the question for those in the progressive wing of the party is whether they continue to pursue some of their more polarizing ideas about identity. Whether Ms. Harris wins or loses next week, few expect full capitulation or retreat, however. This is from Mark Melman, a Democratic strategist, said it's clear now that they have failed to take over the Democratic Party, referring to these uber progressives. They thought this was going to be a much quicker process, but I think they're in it for the long term. The battle is going to continue. So basically, this Democratic strategist saying, you know, the uber progressives have felt like after 2020, they basically took over the Democratic Party. And to some extent, they did, only because people refused to just tell them, shut up. No. You know, because it was like, when you're making arguments based on race and gender, identity, when you're making arguments based on, like, the racial justice arguments around policing, and, or, you know, arguments for transgender or LGBTQ community, other Democrats who recognize that identity politics is ridiculous, they're less likely to push back against crazy ideas like police defunding, because again, it's coming through that racial lens and they don't want to be called racist. Or other ideas like it's coming through a lens of LGBTQ plus issues. So they don't want to be called a transphobe. So they stayed quiet when they should have just said no. And so this small fringe of the party and of America got this outsized voice that often went unchecked by their own party and by the media. For the same reasons, the media didn't want to be called racist. They didn't want to be called transphobes. So it was like this runaway thing where this really stupid idea and this stupid focus on identity politics got much more legs than it would have otherwise if people were brave. And so when you see these key losses and people, I mean, in Seattle, they've moved away from police defunding pretty damn quick, act like that never happened. It's because for voters, even in deep blue Seattle, it wasn't popular. If it had been popular still after the summer of 2020, Ann Davidson would not be the city attorney. So I think a major Trump victory where it's absolutely unquestioned might be just the thing we need to ultimately set the Republican Party back on course, but also do a little snapback for the Democratic Party. All right, can I just play this clip quick of Oprah? Because Oprah used to be the happiness, like love. Car for you. Everybody gets a car. I love everybody. It doesn't matter if you're a Republican or a Democrat. He'll give you things and free things. And now she's saying shit like this.
We don't get to sit this one out. If we don't show up tomorrow, it is entirely possible that we will not have the opportunity to ever cast a ballot again.
Good God. Just nuts. So that's her in Philadelphia, which, did you notice something? I hate that. I hate that they can do this. Please play the clip again.
Okay.
We don't get to sit this one out.
The lectern is a seal of the President of the United States.
If we don't show up tomorrow,
it's a campaign rally.
Mm-hmm. It is entirely possible.
I guess I don't understand how that's allowed.
We will not have the opportunity to ever cast.
Especially when you're going to have other people standing in front of it, like Oprah, like campaigning. Isn't that weird? It must be allowed, I guess, but I don't know.
Because
it just seems
currently VP, so right. It's allowed.
Seems very manipulative and very, like a crossing the line between public office and campaign. But that's just insane. And that's. The more desperate they get, the more desperate their attacks have been, you know, calling Trump or comparing him to Hitler and, oh, we'll never get to vote again because Trump's going to, not leave office. I promise you, freedom-loving Americans, even if they are diehard supporters of the former president, will not take too kindly if he says he's not going to leave office. As I said, we will be in Washington, D.C. ourselves to throw ourselves at the altar of freedom. And democracy and our constitution, if that were to happen, I promise you. And it's also like he left office once before.
Right.
Like we've already done this. Left office last time, like didn't go to the inauguration, you know, didn't really accept defeat, but he still left office. And that actually brings me to my daily subscriber show poll, which I want to get to. I asked you guys on Patreon, Locals and X, do you prefer if a losing candidate offers a concession once the results are clear? So do you want some sort of like put a bow on it, tweet, speech, phone call? Do you want some sort of formal concession? Nicole, what say you?
Gosh, I'm not sure what clear is to me anymore, because we have so many dates that your ballots can start coming in at and like can go to. I just don't know.
Mathematically impossible for you to win.
I guess then, concession's fine. I don't like the 4 days of he still hasn't done it. I don't like that, so.
Yeah, it's just like when Lauren Culp wouldn't concede the race when he was down.
Yeah, that was dumb.
When he was down half a million votes and he's like, oh, I got evidence of a conspiracy. And then he didn't.
Right.
On Patreon, 85% of you say yes, you do want a concession. 15% say no. Paul Harvey, I believe the concession speech is amplifying that in our country, we resolve our differences via the election process, that we as citizens recognize there will be more opportunities to persuade others of positions and legislation we support. Bloom Kitty said, I voted yes, but as a West Coast voter, I think releasing results and giving speeches should at least wait for the polls to close out here. Yeah, there was this incident where when I was on Fox 13, we used to, just scrape results from the Associated Press. And the Associated Press at the time would call races based on exit polling. So it turns 8:01 and at the bottom of our screens, despite like 1% of the vote being in or something ridiculous, it said Jay Inslee was the winner of the gubernatorial race. And that sort of stuff just all of a sudden led people to like wild conspiracies. And we had a conversation with Associated Press about it, about how like what a bad look it was. And then people don't want, to see a concession because they think something's hinky. Alex Hansen says it's the right thing to do, even if the refereeing is atrocious. I'm a coach. You move on to fight another day, even if that means in Trump's case, he can never run again. He can still be a leader and take the party forward and fight, fight, fight. Let me see here. MB, I do like the idea of a concession speech, unity and all that, but the reality is that the high road is gone. Showing humility and sportsmanship just makes them laugh and screw you worse next time. Oh, wow. That's we're feeling really down. I mean, I said that kind of yesterday, though. Democrats are all like, Republicans are lying in texts to voters and playing dirty. And I'm like, yeah, those were pretty nasty text, but you've been doing that for 6 months, so I just don't feel bad for you.
And again, when they came out mad at them, they said they were lies, but they didn't say how they were lying.
Yeah,
it wasn't, they weren't really disputing anything.
Well, one of the things that I agree with is like at least one of the candidates, they said hates God, and she's like, well, I'm a Christian, and that's offensive to say I hate God. And I get that. I do think it was very hyperbolic of Republicans to send out these, but they were focused on gender identity issues to Hispanic voters, which, again, I said, Well, technically, you do support the chemical castration of children. Mm-hmm. And if you don't, you should say that, because the Democratic Party, sure, they might reject you as a Democrat if you say that. Let me see. Todd Welch, I have won and lost contested elections. My losing opponent called me and I called the opponent I lost to. Today, contestants need to exchange numbers and be ready for that call. Maybe not by the end of the week, unless it's too close to call. It is the professional action to take. You guys are just so, you're just good people. You're just good people.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think Dave should call Bob, though, if he were to lose. And you think Bob will call Dave?
No, he will be so...
Oh, my God. If Bob Ferguson loses tonight, he'll probably say the election was stolen.
Probably.
Yeah. By the way, if Trump wins, they'll say the election was stolen.
Of course.
I give it 2 hours to say the election was stolen. They'll go to the Elon Musk thing with Elon Musk giving voters $1 million, you know. So 100%, all that. Oh, Trump thinks the election is stolen. Oh, they'll forget all about that, all about everything they said about it.
By morning.
It'll be by morning. Oh, my God. So obvious. All right, we'll get to your questions, comments, all that good stuff. I'm excited to see you guys twice today. Wow. Mm-hmm. It's going to be a long day for those of us here at the Undivided Podcast. I have encouraged you guys to take the First Mark Challenge just because it really is a no-brainer. Like, look at me. It's a no-brainer. Or listen to me if you're listening to the podcast. Listen to me. It's a no-brainer. Doesn't cost you anything, and it could end up saving you a bunch of money. That was the case for Michelle, who is an Undivided viewer. She says, thank you for recommending First Mark. I kept mentioning to my husband, but he wasn't ready to look into it. We got our renewal with our existing provider for the next 6 months, and our insurance went from $3,000 to $8,000. So she reminded him about First Mark Insurance. They did the First Mark Challenge, and they say Brad at First Mark saved them more than 50%. She says, we can now continue our discussions about getting a travel trailer. Imagine that, just accepting that your insurance was going to go from $3,000 to $8,000 and not calling First Mark when it's totally free. And it takes like an hour of your time to go over your current insurance with them, talk to them about your insurance needs. They'll take a few days shopping the market for you, and then they'll come back with their recommendations. And hey, they might be able to save you money. They might not be able to save you money, but at least you have the knowledge that maybe you have the best insurance that you can get on the market right now, or you're going to save money, get better insurance, realize you were undercovered, overcovered, all of those things. So firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. Take the First Mark Challenge today. You could be our next First Mark Challenge victory. firstmarkinsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you. All right, questions and comments. Holy crafty grandma crispy. Did you hit the lotto? $47 super chat. Nice. Wow. What does 47 signify?
I believe Trump will be the 47th president again.
Like, blonde, gotcha. Remember, today is garbage day, not recycling day. Oh, okay. I got it. Good one. Baron of Gray Matter, $5 super chat. Why now? Why did Inslee activate the National Guard? The lefty newspapers say it's because MAGA will riot. Ha, projection much? The lefties will wig out. Send me the newspaper that's saying MAGA will riot. Because that would be insane if a newspaper here is saying that. When's the last time MAGA rioted here? Never. The answer is never. It's never happened. I saw, I think Ben Shapiro sent out a bunch of pictures of DC's all boarded up. Portland's boarded up. Our governor is called in the National Guard. They're not doing that for the far
there
right.
Are quite a few. Vox. I mean, all of the Telegraph. National. They're all. If Harris wins, you're going to see armed protesters.
As opposed to literally, like, think about that. The one right, you know, the one Republican riot was January 6th. Meanwhile, thousands of left-wing riots. I mean, I've been physically assaulted more times than I can count. How many freaking riots have I covered from the left-wing here? And it's like, oh, well, let's look at the possible scenarios. The side that never riots will riot. Or the side that riots every day will riot.
Right.
Which one? And I'm not saying that there might be some far righties who lose their minds if Harris loses. I'm just saying that based on experience, they're not the side right now on Capitol Hill in Seattle plastering posters up that say, whether Harris or Trump wins, we're rioting because either side is a vote for genocide. There's only one side doing that right now. And the sooner we stop treating it like the other side does it just as much, the better off we'll be as a country. Mm-hmm. Sergeant Pickles, $4.99 super chat. On a positive note, is Boeing employees agreed to a deal? I think is very fair, but not perfect. I'll miss being a full-time dad. Me dad, though. Yeah, that's great. Boeing employees reached a, deal with the company to go back to work. So Rick Eckert, $10 super chat. Just want to say thank you to everyone who worked so hard this election cycle, but especially to you, Brandy and Nicole, for all you did. Great talking with you on Sunday. Have a great night tonight. Yeah. And thank you guys for following us through the whole thing. And it's not over yet. We've got a busy night to get through. David Poland, I have been an election observer in Clark County and they will count your vote and it will be as you voted. Ask your county election observers any questions. Both parties have them. Yeah, it's good to go see how everything happens and know that they're not going in there and filling things out. Garbage. But observers are there for a reason. Mm-hmm. Bill Biz, $20 super chat. Elon Musk's dire prediction. If the swing states with razor-thin margins are being continually and intentionally targeted with migration, that will virtually turn every state into a California-style one-party state. Again, I've said it. If you think January 6th was a threat to our democracy, but you don't believe what's happening at the southern border is a threat to our democracy and an existential threat to our country, then you are so hopelessly biased that I cannot save you. Now, again, that's coming from someone who does believe that January 6th was an attempt to threaten our democratic process. Diana with $20 super chat. The term homelessness is the problem. Anyone who recently lost their job or home, housing works. We need a more accurate term for those with addiction or mental health issues. It's then harder to hide the problem. Yes. It's not a homelessness problem. It's an addiction problem.
Right. She's saying there is a homelessness problem for some people, but there's two different
groups. Housing works for those people. Mm-hmm. Housing doesn't work for people who are on the streets because they have an underlying issue. Carrie Arrington, mm-hmm. Arrington, my hubby and I are pondering pulling stakes and leaving Washington. This election may be the proverbial straw. I can't say I really would blame anyone. Mm-hmm. It also depends on what you do for a living and, you know, I don't want you to leave, but I know.
On our own.
Robin Hofstad, oh no, I threw up a little at the thought of Bob Ferguson.
There's quite a few people that were like, oh,
yeah, well, I do that every day. Just kidding. Oh, when I said we're having Bob Ferguson on. Let me see here. Bonnie, I've experienced the same with a special needs student, emotionally draining as you watch the student withdraw. Yeah, the fact that all the money we have in this state, you know, they're sending $500,000 to give prison inmates transgender surgeries and laser hair removal, and we're falling short for our special needs students. Give me a break.
Ridiculous.
It's sick. Oh, my sister. Yeah. My sister, Miranda, I'm watching Lord of the Rings until the sun rises on America tomorrow. I love that. The other week, I sat and watched every Lord of the Rings in sequence. And that's like a 10 to 12 hour ordeal. Yeah. That was a commitment.
You were real productive that weekend.
I wasn't, no. It was just, you watch one. And, well, it's because Rings of Power got done, the series, it was like the season finale. And I know it's very an unpopular opinion because it was like woke, you know, they cast like black elves or whatever. Right. But I was like, I liked it. And I like when you fall in love with something like Harry Potter, to me, like any spinoff or any extension of that universe is fun because then it's like not over. Right. Mm-hmm. So I like it that it's like not, you know, it's not, you get more of it. So then I watched that finale happen. And then I was like, let me just keep rolling in the LOTR.
I haven't done that with Lord of the Rings, but maybe Love is Blind.
That's just
reality
depressing.
Trashy TV. Yeah. Reality TV.
Yeah. Dolores Wilson, $20 super chat for a bottle of wine. Thank you. That's so nice.
Isn't that sweet?
That is nice. Old Sub Sailor, $20. You guys are giving us lots of money today. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to say no. Old Sub Sailor, $20 super chat. Proudly garbage. God bless America. We're all just deplorable trash.
They're feeling the economy turning. They're hopeful about the economy. That's why they're giving us money.
Yeah, please don't unsubscribe if the economy takes a dive. Two Ladies Midwest Adventures. Brandy Nicole. Jenny says she wants to see more of your cats. Much love from us in Nebraska. Good to follow you all on this election day. More, you know, Nicole, I'm always up for some cat pics. Depending on how tonight goes, maybe we stack some pics of our cats and dogs
tomorrow,
in there. Just a little,
happy. We'll do dog cat picture in between every segment.
Just a little bit of a reprieve. Mm-hmm. Okay. We're going to do some housekeeping, clue you guys in on what's happening tonight. But first, let's get to our closing sanity check. Everything is going to be fine. Take a deep breath with me, Nicole.
I wish we could play music.
Are you breathing?
I'm breathing.
In yoga, we do, you breathe it out, ha. You do, so just get to let it all out.
Okay.
Everything's gonna be fine. regardless of who wins the presidency, yeah, I mean, things might get a little rough and tumble for a little while. Same in Washington State. The sun is going to rise on America tomorrow. The sun covered by clouds will come up in Washington State tomorrow as well. And we will get through it, and we'll get through it together. Team Sanity all the way till the end of time. I appreciate every single one of you for really everything that you have done and contributed to this election cycle, being involved, caring enough to get your ballots in, to track the races, to know what you're voting for, to know what you're voting against. As a reminder, tonight at 8:30 p.m., our live election night coverage begins on location at the Let's Go Washington Return Party. We'll be joined by special guests. Brian Haywood will be there. We'll be chatting with candidates throughout the night. And tracking all the results as they come in. One final reminder to track your ballot before the 8 p.m. deadline. If you have not turned your ballot in already, you do have to do that to a ballot drop box by 8 p.m. At this point, please put it in a drop box, not the U.S. Postal Service. It would have to be postmarked by today. So vote if you haven't voted, and we will all take a collective deep breath and take the results that come in stride. So I will see you guys tonight for our live election night coverage starting across platforms at 8:30 p.m. Pacific time. Until then, sign up to support our show if you have not already. It's just $5 a month. And it makes sure Nicole and I are here to follow all the crazy with all of you that ensues. So you can sign up undividedpod.com, undividedpod.com. I will see you in 7 hours and 19 minutes. Whoop.